Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. Welcome back to another week of Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Vanderhart with Brian Myers.
Hey, I got a question for you.
Yes.
Now that the caucuses are over, I mean, is your
I'm
wife...
I'm going to Disneyland.
Well, question was, will Cheryl actually get to see something besides the back of your head on TV?
Yes.
Will she actually get to see you in person
yes,
now?
Yes. Basically, yes. Yeah, almost every evening, so.
Wow.
I know.
When was the last time you were home every night?
For a whole week? It's been a long time. Yeah.
Of course, she may be saying, hey, Shane, don't you need to
go somewhere? Yeah.
You need to cover New Hampshire?
You can leave. I hear, yeah.
Take the garbage out and stay out there for a while.
Right.
Oh, my. Oh, we have some big news, too.
Yes.
As of, I think it's actually Sunday, well, as far as the calendar date is concerned, we will have been on the air for 2 years. Can you believe it?
I know, I can't believe they allowed us to be on that long. So that's
a good point.
That's a huge accomplishment.
Well, and to our listeners, if you are warped enough to have stayed with us that long, we salute you.
Absolutely, absolutely. we talked about the Iowa caucuses. Obviously, being a weekly show, we're at a disadvantage. We don't get to talk about it, like, right the next day. So the news is getting a little stale, but I think we can't have an episode go by and not talk about the results.
Oh, so, no, we have to.
I wanted to bring on a friend of mine, Wes Enos. He's a campaign veteran and a former member of the Republican Party of Iowa State Central Committee. Wes is a sharp guy. He's been around the block a few times, and he knows campaigns, and he understands the caucuses, so we just wanted to pick his brain. Everybody knows I'm a Cruz supporter. Wes Enos is a Rubio supporter, so I wanted to bring a little balance to the force here.
Well, by the way, Wes, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Welcome, Wes.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate the chance to be on with you.
Not a problem. So I just wanted to, just initially, did this pan out the way you thought?
The caucuses?
Yes.
You know, it did in a way, but it didn't. The pecking order of the caucuses kind of came out the way that I thought it would. I thought there was a bigger possibility that Rubio might actually top Trump as we kind of went forward, just because we saw consolidation.
Came pretty close, yeah.
In his numbers. So it was that was a very, very close call. The one thing I didn't see was the turnout numbers that came in. I mean, we had, 186,000 people showing up for the caucuses.
Absolutely.
The number's completely unheard of. And going into the caucuses, we just didn't see the registration of Republicans, any of that pre-registration sort of wave that happened when we saw Obama pull off a massive coup.
Right. It was I think the Secretary of State reported maybe a bump of 6,000, I think, in January, something like that. Yeah.
And it was even going in, I mean, the last couple of weeks, it was like 600. So I was anticipating a record-setting turnout. But every year is a record-setting turnout when we grow by about 10% every caucus cycle.
That's true.
But that should have been somewhere in the neighborhood of 35,000 is about what my little calendar would have told me.
Right. I said numerous times I'd be shocked if we broke 150,000. Mm-hmm. Well, yep. Color me shocked.
Yep.
I think we all were shocked. What's also shocking about it is we all kind of figured for the Trump number to actually be real, we would have had to be looking at something over 150,000.
Yes.
And then we find out that it wasn't actually Trump supporters who were coming out big in the end anyway.
Right.
Well, along those lines, Wes, when did you begin to see a surge in Rubio's numbers?
We actually started to see the surge in Rubio's numbers almost a week before the caucus. When we kind of went into that last register poll, you know, you won the register endorsement. You know, you can say that's good. You can say that's bad. But they do generally tend to do a nice job of picking who eventually wins. I don't think that's anything necessarily about their endorsement that actually gives you a bump.
Right.
But they do probably notice some trends that kind of move them in the right direction and give them that effort and give them that insight. It's the same insight that anybody else has if you look. So Rubio, we started to see that bump once people started to notice that you know, Bush, Christie, Fiorina, and like Kasich, those guys weren't probably going to be viable going into the caucus.
Gilmore.
You know, you can't help but feel a little bad for poor Jim Gilmore. He's a great guy. He's a nice guy.
Yeah,
but he didn't.
He should have been here. He would have at least doubled his numbers.
Well, that's true. Although I feel like I probably could have doubled his numbers as a family alone. That doesn't mean I'm going to run for president.
Right.
You know, and you do. He's a good guy, and it's a tough thing. But I think people started to look and notice that there was a lot of people being non-viable, and then there was this whole we can't let Donald Trump win, and we really don't like Cruz. I mean, there's a group of people in that group that weren't Cruz supporters, and they didn't want to see Trump, and they didn't want to see Cruz either.
Mm-hmm.
So they started to look for somebody else, literally anybody else. It's the same rise, almost identical to the rise we saw of Rick Santorum back in 2012. Santorum's numbers were low the whole period. Now, Rubio was at least in the mid-teens throughout most of
He was definitely stronger than Santorum.
I kept trying to convince Santorum followers there was not a surge coming, but they didn't want to listen to me.
Yeah,
it's like I went to some of his events, or a couple of his events, like the last 2 weeks, and it's like, yeah, in 2012, he was seeing many more people than this at his events.
Now, you could see it coming back then.
Right, yeah.
You really could.
Well, and you could see it coming for the same reason you could see Rubio's surge coming. People started to flock to him, and people were looking for door number three because they weren't really all that thrilled with door number one or door number two. So everybody was looking for door number three, and he seemed to be the most viable door number three, and the numbers started to crank up for him. And I anticipated they'd get to about that level. Like I said, I assumed Trump would actually be a little lower because I didn't think turnout would be as high, and I thought the higher turnout we had, the better off things were for Trump.
Right.
So, and then it turns out, as I'm talking to new people who are just registering in line, it wasn't Trump they were there for.
Right.
By and large, it was Rubio, it was Cruz, and to some extent, it was even Carson that I talked to a lot of people who they just really liked him.
Yeah.
And they were showing up, but it wasn't these massive and armies for Donald Trump.
Yeah, and Cruz, Carson, and Rubio all outperformed polling. Obviously, Rubio did the most, actually outside the margin of error. So you definitely winners definitely for the Iowa caucus would be Rubio and Cruz.
I would say Rubio and Cruz. I would throw Jack Whitaker in there as well.
Yeah.
You know, picked a campaign that was surging or that was kind of left. And initially, I didn't think anything was going to happen with Rubio. The race seemed extremely crowded with better known candidates. You know, he's this first-term senator. He's a great speaker, but I didn't think he had anything really to interject into the race. And as things kind of went on, he seemed to be the candidate that a lot of people started to gravitate to toward the end.
Right.
You know, Cruz is the same sort of thing. The difference is I thought Cruz would have had more success in Iowa just because Cruz fits the natural base of Iowa very well.
Right.
You know, once he started to pick up the endorsements that he was picking up, and starting to consolidate the evangelical base the way he was consolidating it. I just didn't see, the polls didn't say this, but I didn't believe anything the polls were telling me anyway.
Right. I think the biggest losers would be the pollsters.
The biggest losers, I'm pretty sure, the pollsters. And the people running Democrat primaries where they flipped coins for winners.
Oh, man.
They would be losers as well.
Crazy. Wes, tell us, what kind of an effect this is going to have on Donald Trump? How badly was he hurt by coming in second?
Well, I mean, just look at the media coverage that Donald Trump has had this entire week. It's been usually Donald Trump dominates everything. Everything is all about Donald Trump. Everything you hear, everything you see, everything you even look in the direction of a television when you're in the lunchroom and it's his face just up there squawking away. that's not been the case this week. You've seen him completely drop off. We're seeing new national numbers that are showing surging numbers for Rubio, growing numbers for Cruz, and sagging numbers for Trump. I mean, you've literally got a true three-person race right now,
right.
And that's not been the case all up to this point. It has been Donald Trump, giant gap, everybody else, and bunched up at the bottom.
Right.
And we're not seeing that anymore. People have a Rubio and Cruz, I think, have both broken through, and Trump doesn't dominate the headlines anymore. Now he's trying to figure out how he can do that. I think he's, you know, used the whole debacle with Ben Carson to try and reinsert his nose back into the headlines by screaming that he was robbed and this must be how I lost the Iowa caucus.
He has Karl Rove in his pocket saying the same thing.
Well, and it's a ridiculous accusation for anybody to be making that it had any impact on the caucuses whatsoever.
Right. Mm-hmm. Good. Yeah.
You look at the numbers of it. I mean, you figure Cruz finished, what, 6,300 votes?
Cruz had, something like that.
Yeah, right about 6,300 votes ahead of Donald Trump. You figure that Ben Carson finished 26,000 votes behind Rubio, who was in third place. Ben Carson finished with 17,300 votes. That's a good number of votes. But think about what you're saying by saying that this thing impacted anything at all. I mean, you're talking about a couple guys standing up at a few precincts around the state.
Right.
Probably less than 3% of precincts, and that's if we're being generous.
Right, and just even if they stood up and said that, did anybody really change their votes as a result?
Well, I think it's telling that we haven't seen one person step forward and say, you know what, I voted for Cruz because they lied to me and said Carson was dropping out. I've yet to meet that person. So, let alone 6,300 of that person, or if you want to believe the numbers even more, 26,000 of that person. Those numbers don't exist, because what you're saying is Carson lost between 30% and 70% of the vote he would have got in 3% of precincts. Come on.
Really? At the end of the day, this is much ado about nothing if we're actually talking about the effect it had on the election.
Right.
Yep.
By the way, you're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio with Shane Van Aert, Brian Myers on Truth Network 99.3 FM, and on the line we have Wes Enos, a campaign veteran, former state central committee member, just picking his brain about the Iowa
political
caucus.
Junkie.
Yep. there was a certain blogger who shall remain nameless,
but his initials are.
who said, I don't think. Ted Cruz has the organization he says he does. Did Ted Cruz have the organization he said he did?
I think Ted Cruz has the organization he said he did. He probably might be better than people think he is. You got to think of who he's got running his national campaign. He's got a guy named Jeff Rowe, who is based out of Kansas City, might actually be one of the most prolific campaign people I've ever met or worked with in my entire life. I mean, I don't learn a lot from campaign people just from having been around, but having worked with Jeff, I probably learned more in 6 months working with Jeff than I learned with anybody in the past 10 years. I mean, he's very intelligent, and he's kind of a pit bull. I mean, you don't fail, because that's really not an option working around Jeff. He's detailed and he's tough, and he'll come up with new ideas. Their data, I wasn't really involved with Cruz, obviously supporting Rubio, but at the same time, I just know the kind of things that he does and what he demands of his campaign staff and his data people.
Well,
and I just can't imagine that it wasn't some of the most prolific stuff I've ever seen.
I just saw even the Rubio camp was acknowledging the kind of organization he had, so I thought. That claim was kind of interesting.
Well, a couple of weeks ago we were hearing about the number of precinct captains that they had in place,
1,800.
And the cash that they had. It's like, come on, they're doing something right.
Right.
Well, on top of that, winning a caucus is really not rocket science. I mean, you identify your people and you turn them out.
Absolutely.
And there's a matrix for doing that. I did some volunteer work with Rubio as well. I mean, I didn't work for the campaign by any stretch of the imagination, but I did go in a few times and volunteer. I was a precinct captain and talked to him and yada, yada, yada. But what I was noticing when I was volunteering with Rubio was they had done the blocking and tackling involved with building a campaign organization just as well as anybody else I'd ever seen. I mean, they, when we sat down and started calling through lists, they were cleaned lists. I mean, these were people who were identified and were definitely supporting Marco Rubio, and you were getting page after page after page after page of that. That requires a lot of effort. That requires a lot of organizational strength. I'd be shocked if it wasn't the same in the Cruz camp, and I think that's why those two were so successful in outperforming their numbers, is they knew who was going to support them, and they knew who to drive to turn out.
And go ahead.
I mean, contrast that with Trump. I mean, I got a call from a lady in my neighborhood who got a call from Donald Trump saying, hey, we need you to be our precinct captain. You're going to be our on-the-ground leader in our precinct. She didn't even support Donald Trump. She'd been to an event one time, and this was 2 days before the caucus.
Well, it sounded like they spent more money on hats than they spent on, you know, targeted data.
Well, they seem to have been really relying.
Well, those hats are really great.
They were relying on these large crowds of people that was their focus.
Yeah.
The star power of Trump,
and
if you
frankly,
will.
If Donald Trump was not Donald Trump, he wouldn't have gotten 45,000. I mean, just on the type of campaign he ran. This was a cult of personality that got him these numbers.
And celebrity as well. I mean, cult of personality, cult of celebrity, call it what you want to call it. At the end of the day, I mean, you turnout numbers are great, but you can't rely on them to turn out, especially if you got two other people who are doing the blocking and tackling involved with actually winning this kind of an event. So I struggle to look at Trump and say this was anything but an anomaly based solely on Trump's celebrity.
How's he doing down in South Carolina?
It's impossible to say. South Carolina and New Hampshire right now, because we're kind of going into this last week. Are you talking about Trump, or are you talking about
Trump?
Say, which way? Before I answer this question, which candidate are you referring to?
Hey, about 5 seconds.
All right. So I think he's doing okay, but we'll have to see how New Hampshire goes. That'll change a lot. It historically has.
Yep. Well, this is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment. Thanks, Wes.
Thanks, Wes.
Thanks, guys.
Hi, this is Brian Myers of Myers & Associates. If you're involved in maintenance at a manufacturing plant, you know how costly it can be when a machine goes down. And if the reason that machine went down is because the electronic controls on it failed, it can really be problematic if those electronics are obsolete. Well, not to worry. We represent Providence Industrial Electronics Repair, and they can get your machine up and running in no time. They repair boards, drives, servo motors, light curtains, you name it. So if you need industrial electronics repaired at your plant, or if you have other industrial maintenance needs, give me a call at 515-490-2640. That's Myers & Associates, 515-490-2640. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029, and he can help you find the life insurance
you need.
So, this is Shane Vanner with Brian Myers, and we had a controversy here with the Iowa caucus. Just to kind of give you a very abbreviated timeline, just for the sake of time, CNN reported that Dr. Ben Carson was going to be not going to New Hampshire and South Carolina. I don't have the article in front of me, so I can't read it word for word here. But basically, that he was going to be traveling to Florida. Some of the language used in tweets by CNN was he was taking a break. But the thing was that he was not going to be in New Hampshire, even though New Hampshire is only 8 days away after Iowa. That was kind of the message that was sent. The Cruz campaign saw that, latched onto that. They sent out an email to grassroots activists, precinct captains, saying basically that he's taking a break. But then the first email said that there will be a big announcement next week. my biggest critique with that particular email is that phrase, because I'm not sure where that was read in the press, and I haven't heard any satisfactory answer. So that was sent out about 3-4 minutes before the Iowa caucuses actually start at 7 o'clock. Then Congressman Steve, then supposedly right around that time, maybe a couple minutes later, CNN tweeted out, no, he's just going back for clothes, and he'll be, he'll be going to the National Prayer Breakfast, and then he'll be on the campaign trail.
So when did Steve King's tweet
Steve
go
King's
out?
Tweets didn't actually go out till like 7:20. And here's
the
thing.
So they were much later then.
Much later, already. And I guess, you know, we got some clips I want to play, and this want to play some from some people who, well, let's we've got a Karl Rove clip. I'm not sure I want to play that yet, just for sake of time. Let's go ahead and jump on what Trump really jumped on this in New Hampshire, because obviously everybody knows, you know, hopefully you know by now, Ted Cruz did win the Iowa caucuses.
Really?
Yeah, really. You know, there might be somebody who's living in a rock and under a rock and didn't know that. And Donald Trump came in second and was a surprise because, you know, all the latest polling showed Donald Trump ahead.
But he's still not a loser.
Yeah. Anyway, he's the second winner. So, making second place great again. Anyway, let's go ahead and play this clip by I can't take credit for that. Somebody else came up with that, but
that's
I love using it. Yeah, so let's play this clip by Trump, clip number 2, Ron.
I think what he did is disgusting. He said that Ben Carson, who's a fantastic guy, had dropped out of the race during the caucus. He had dropped out of the race and vote for Ted Cruz. All of those people come and vote for Ted Cruz, and many of them did. I think it was a disgrace that he did it, and I don't think it should be even allowed. I think those votes should be taken away, and there were plenty of them. Number two, very important, he did a voter violation form. It looks like it comes from a federal government or at least a state government. The paper it was on, everything about it was disgraceful. It was a fraud as far as I was concerned. And I looked at it. I just saw it a little while ago. When I looked at it, I said, wow, it looks like government is saying, and then they grade you and they've got F's, like failure, F, F, F. And it said, you're going to go straighten it out. Essentially, go vote and go vote for Ted Cruz. And then, of course, he misrepresents on me all the time, says I like Obamacare. I've been fighting Obamacare ever since you've been interviewing me, and I'll get rid of it. Believe me, I'll repeal it and replace it. But he tells everybody
right there, just ever since you've been interviewing me, like 3 minutes ago,
yeah.
I've been fighting Obamacare. Wow, what a commitment. Oh,
I find it interesting, too. The warm fuzzy between Trump and Cruz seems to be over.
It's gone.
It?
It's gone. Well, we knew that was going to be gone as soon as Cruz posed a threat.
Of course.
That's his MO. Okay, a couple things. One, first of all, I didn't think the email should have been sent. However, I believe it was a case of, oh, this is exciting news. We need to get this out to our grassroots. I don't think it was an intent to mislead anybody, because the CNN, you know, correction and a clarification, and the Carson clarification didn't come until a little bit after or a couple minutes before. But here's the thing. Does people really believe that people just monitor Twitter like crazy, that they see, catch every tweet? If you think that's the case, you don't spend much time on Twitter, honestly, because the shelf life of a tweet is very short.
Shelf life of a tweet.
Right.
Let's consider that for a moment. I think you're exactly right. This was a situation that it's too bad that it happened.
Right.
Those communications should not have gone out. I agree with you. However, campaigns step in it all the time.
Right.
I don't think this is, I think you're exactly right. I do not see this as something that had malicious intent.
And to Trump's point here, first of all, he needs to go read Iowa's election law. It's called election misconduct here in the state of Iowa. What was done, as distasteful as you think that mailer was, and I was not a fan of the flyer, as much as you may not like the email that went out, It was based at the time on what was being reported. None of that is illegal. None of it. Because in the caucus, you can make a case for your candidate. You can bash other candidates you want. That's generally not recommended, but you can when you speak on behalf
of
your candidate. There's no criteria or rules about it. It's not fraud. Fraud would be changing votes. Fraud would be, I'm going to throw out these ballots. That's fraud. What was done was not fraud. As far as there were many, many votes. There is no way Donald Trump can know that. There's no way any of us can know how many votes. But here's what I do know. Not a single person has come forward to say, hey, I changed my vote from Carson to Cruz because of what a Cruz person said. Not one person.
Yeah, Bob Vanderplaats made that point.
Yep.
Where are these droves of people that were affected?
Because if this happened, this would be leading the news. But that's not the case. Anyway,
we're going to have to hustle up here.
Yeah, we have Branstad weighs in on this, too. Governor Branstad.
This thing that they distributed on caucus night, saying that Dr. Carson was likely to drop out and his supporters should support Cruz, that is, I think, unethical and unfair. And I think there'll be repercussions to that. And I don't, from what I've seen in the poll this morning, he's not gotten any bump in New Hampshire. So we'll see. And in fact, it'll be interesting to see what happens in New Hampshire because this is the next step, and we'll know that next Tuesday.
And as far as New Hampshire, I think depends on which poll you look at. And a lot of the polling yet has not been entirely post Iowa. So we're not going to for sure know. I am under no illusions that Cruz is going to win the New Hampshire primary. He's just probably not the kind of candidate who would, especially in an open primary. I think that's Trump's to lose. I would submit that Rubio probably is the candidate that's most likely to derail Trump in New Hampshire. Anyway, as far as, it being unfair, if this happened to my candidate, I think I would be upset too. So I'm not discounting Carson supporters being upset by this at all.
But there's no surprise here that the governor would make a remark like this.
Right, because obviously there's no love lost between Governor Branstad and Senator Cruz because Branstad, Cruz was his anti-endorsement. So that kind of discredits a lot of what he says already about Cruz. Cruz did apologize publicly. That's clip four.
Ben Carson is someone who I respect and admire. Ben and Candy have become friends. We've had dinner together more than once, and he is a man of great character and integrity and principle. I really very much admire him. Last night, when CNN posted a news report that Ben was not continuing on to New Hampshire, not continuing on to South Carolina, but instead was going to Florida, our political team forwarded it to the members of our team. But unfortunately, they did not then forward the subsequent story that was Ben's campaign clarifying that he was continuing the campaign and was not canceling the campaign. And so I apologize to Ben for that. They should have forwarded that subsequent story. That was a mistake on our part.
So it's not like they tried to, sweep it under the rug. He addressed it. He didn't try to hide it. He didn't deny it. This was done.
No, but he didn't fall on his sword, and that's what people want.
Right, right. And he's not making other people fall on their sword either, what Carson wants. Let's listen to his response.
Well, as Christians, of course, we accept people's apologies. But we also have to ask ourselves, is this acceptable to us, the American people? Or should there be some accountability? One of the things that really irritated a lot of people about the current administration during the IRS scandal and other things, nobody ever is accountable.
True.
Nobody's head rolls. And is that going to be the same culture
right,
that we
can
find
go ahead
here?
I guess we can stop that for a second. By the way, you're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and we're discussing the Carson Cruz brouhaha.
Who's head? Hypothetically, is supposed to roll.
I suppose Spence Rogers. He's the one that sent out the first email. Maybe he, you know, Carson wants Congressman King to be booted off the campaign as national co-chair. By the way, Congressman King spoke at the Boone Caucus and made no mention of this. I just thought I'd point that out. Which you think if he was trying to derail and trying to mislead, that would be a more probably effective place to talk about this than on Twitter, because nobody is monitoring Twitter when you're in the middle of a caucus. Mm-hmm. Okay, we have just enough time. Carson had a press conference, and there's a couple things that came up. That's
you're asking others to make a judgment on whether Ted Cruz is who he says he is. Do you think he is who he says he is?
Well, I guess you have to preface that by telling me who does he say he is.
Well, he says his campaign is a revival, which will turn America back to God.
He says he's the choice for evangelical voters. Are you saying that they should reconsider their support for him, given what you're alleging?
I'm saying that evangelical voters, just like everybody else, should listen to what I just said and evaluate a person on what they do, how they treat other people, and that includes myself. I want people to evaluate me on that basis also.
Did Ted Cruz apologize to you?
Yes, he did.
What else did he say?
Well, he said, obviously, he didn't know that people were doing this kind of thing in his organization, and he didn't agree with it.
Do you regret announcing that you were going to be going back to Florida and spurring some of this confusion?
Well, I didn't make that announcement. I guess somebody talked to other people.
Well, your campaign told the press.
I didn't say it, so don't blame me.
But you're here telling us that people should know what's going on in their campaign and hold people accountable.
Is it? Well, let me ask you this question.
All right, we can stop it there. So,
what, my fault? I didn't do it.
Wait, yeah. I think it's pretty clear that Senator Cruz did not know. Because here's the thing, guys. He was, when this first email went out, he was getting ready to, I mean, he was about ready to speak at one of the caucus sites. And he didn't know about this until, until he was done, because he is busy. It's not like they're whispering in his ear. It's not mm-hmm. like he's monitoring his phone when he's speaking.
Right.
He had no idea. And campaigns run like that. They don't run everything by the candidate. They do have a lot of latitude. I'm not saying, if there was malicious intent, if this was meant to mislead, but then I would say, if that was proven by that one of his campaign staff was trying to do that, then yeah, that person should be fired. But if this was just an honest mistake, they're trying to share news, I think we need to chalk it up to they jumped the gun, this miscommunication. And the simple fact is, Carson outperformed his polling. He did well. This did not negatively impact him. Moving on. And they have moved on to New Hampshire. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries with Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give him a call at 515 515- 800-292-7141 or go to crosswalkcounseling.org. This is Shane Vanner with Brian Myers, and we're going to talk about just different items in the news.
Okay, first up on our news rundown, according to Fox News, President Obama will propose a $10 fee for every barrel of oil to be paid by oil companies in order to fund clean energy transport system. The White House announced Thursday, although Republicans were quick to declare the plan dead on arrival in Congress. The fee would be phased in over 5 years and would provide $20 billion per year for traffic reduction, investment in transit systems, and other modes of transport such as high-speed rail. It would also offer $10 billion to encourage investment in clean transport at the regional level. Obama is expected to formalize the proposal Tuesday. Well, I tell you what, right out of the gate, this just drives me crazy because whenever the price of energy goes down, the politicians line up to raise taxes. We saw it here in Iowa. Remember just a year ago or so, the price of oil drops and our beloved governor says, well, this is a perfect time to increase the gas tax here.
Unfortunately, there's not been any talk about increasing it again.
Well,
we're going into an election year, so that would not be a smart thing to do.
But this is classic. You know, crude oil is dropped down to, you know, these ludicrously low prices, which of course they won't stay there, but temporarily they're very low. So what's the first thing a good politician does? Hey, let's raise taxes. Nobody will even feel it right now. That's the way they think.
Yeah.
It's just, anyway.
So I'm glad the Republicans declared the plan dead on arrival. Good. Well, that's one thing they're willing to stand on and fight against. Okay.
All right. In a strongly worded editorial on Thursday, the Des Moines Register called on the Iowa Democratic Party to move quickly to prove that Monday's results are correct. The piece entitled Editorial, Something Smells in the Democratic Party.
Well, I wholeheartedly agree with that title, the headline.
Well, get this, though.
We may think that reason for, you know, we may have different, you know, perspectives on that, but anyway.
The first line of the article, once again, the world is laughing at Iowa. Oh, dear. It gets sharper from there. What happened Monday night at the Democratic caucuses was a debacle, period. Democracy, particularly at the local party level, can be slow, messy, and obscure, but the refusal to undergo scrutiny or allow for an appeal reeks of autocracy, Des Moines Register reads. The Iowa Democratic Party must act quickly to assure the accuracy of the caucus results beyond a shadow of a doubt. The editorial cites Clinton's razor-thin victory as too close not to do a complete audit of results.
I agree, but frankly, how do you do that when it's not like you got ballots? It's not like they're counting heads.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I have no idea how in the world you would audit this.
Right. So, I mean, at least with the Republican process, you have people watching the count being done. Then it was, I mean, with the Microsoft technology, kudos to them. That was slick how we got those results, the unofficial results. But then they're also doing the paper forms too. But there's accountability. People are taking pictures of the forms, and there's accountability in the process. I think Democrats, if they care about our First in Nation status, they need to change the way they caucus, and they need to start doing it more like how Republicans do it. This whole doing delegate math at the precinct level, I think it's a bunch of garbage.
Well, and
I don't know why they're doing that.
And I don't blame people for scratching their heads when they hear this business of six coin tosses.
Right.
And Hillary wins all six.
Right. Well, I've heard different stories. So that's but that's a point too. Who's right? What actually happened?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, just the notion that it's won by a coin toss.
Yes.
And then secondly, now you're saying it's a rumor, but whatever. The notion that there's a possibility at least exists that one candidate wins all six coin tosses, nobody believes that.
Right.
So anyway, on that score, somebody ought to look into that for
right.
sure.
Right, but I'm not sure how you even do that. Who do you talk to? Where's the coin? I mean, you know, how can you verify any of this?
Well, I had it, but I used it on the Snickers bar.
Right.
The other
day. I mean, seriously, you can't. So I don't even know what they're going to audit, other than the paper that you know the precinct captain filled out.
Sure.
Okay.
But yeah, the way they, in some respects, I like, the only thing I really like, I like about the way they caucus is they winnow out weaker candidates in the caucus and try to, I mean, I think that's not such a bad idea. That can be done with paper ballot too, if they want to keep that tradition. Mm-hmm. But I really think they need to do paper and not head counts and not have
that's
people move around.
That's a disaster.
Right.
Okay. Next up from NBC News. Condoleezza Rice aides and Colin Powell also got classified info on personal emails. I'm going to sigh reading this, but anyway, State Department officials have determined that classified information was sent to the personal email accounts of former Secretary of State Colin Powell and the senior staff of former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, NBC News has learned. In an interview with NBC News, Powell challenged the conclusion, saying nothing that went to his personal account was secret. A Rice spokesperson said the emails were about diplomatic communications. Anyway, if this is true,
mm-hmm.
that will be the end of any thoughts of prosecuting Mrs. Clinton. If this is true.
That's my
view of the matter. If it's true.
Yeah, I suppose. But it does show a systematic problem within the State Department.
Doesn't it, though?
Mm-hmm.
Something just doesn't seem right there at all. And last but not least, according to the Daily Caller, 300 scientists want NOAA to stop hiding its global warming data. Hundreds of scientists sent a letter to lawmakers Thursday warning National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration scientists may have violated federal laws when they published a 2015 study purporting to eliminate the 15-year hiatus in global warming from the temperature record. We had a clip from NPR on this subject here a couple of weeks ago on the show. Anyway, it says this: we, the undersigned, scientists, engineers, economists, and others who have looked carefully into the effects of carbon dioxide released by human activities, wish to record our support for the efforts of the Committee on Science, Space, and Technology to ensure that federal agencies complied with federal guidelines that implemented the Data Quality Act. Some 300 scientists, engineers, and other experts wrote to the chairman of the House Science Committee, Texas Republican Representative Lamar Smith. In our opinion, NOAA has failed to observe the OMB, that's the Office of Management and Budget, and its guidelines to establish in relation to the Data Quality Act. The Data Quality Act requires federal agencies like NOAA to ensure and maximize the quality, objectivity. Objectivity, utility, and integrity of information, including statistical information. Now, what this is all about is this report said the hiatus in global warming never really happened. And they utterly ignored the satellite data
right.
when they reached these conclusions. Now, what other bias they brought to the table or whatever other evidence they ignored, I can't say. But certainly they ignored the satellite data. And so as far as I'm concerned anyway, not that I'm a scientist, but so far as I'm concerned, that means that their report isn't worth the paper it's written on.
So true. This is Caffeinate Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Approximately 15 million U.S. residents have their identities used fraudulently each year, with financial losses totaling upwards of $50 billion. Identity theft can ruin you financially, but consider with me something even more dangerous. I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. People tend to struggle to have peace with God and others because their identity in Christ has been stolen. If you don't really know who you are, then you are not going to know how to respond to others. Society has promoted independence, self-analysis, self-indulgence, and exploration of life outside of God's directives. We are created by God, and therefore our identity is in Him. We can read a scripture to know who we are. We are not dependent upon societal norms or trends that are fickle and ever-changing. Don't let the world squeeze you into its mold, and don't let it steal your identity. Get clarity on who you are in Christ. Call Crosswalk Ministries at 515-635-5465. Or online at crosswalkcounseling.org.
And welcome back, Cafe Thoughts Radio. Oh, have you checked us out on the web? You know, we do more than just a radio program. We write as well. At least I write. Brian doesn't write so much.
Well, this week I had a piece.
You did. You did. So I have to give you credit for that.
Go to my semi-annual contribution.
But you contribute every week on Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Is that what you call it?
Yeah, well, yes, yes.
I contribute.
You contribute.
Here. Ron, what do you think about that? Do I contribute here?
I like that. Yes, you do.
You do.
Yeah.
You do. You know, be sure to go to caffeinatethoughts.com and check us out. Like us on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/caff, C-A-F-F, thoughts. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/caff thoughts, C-A-F-F, thoughts. We'd appreciate it. Now, that way you can stay updated. Also, you can subscribe to our emails. There's an email form right on the website when you go. That way you never miss an update. So I encourage you to do that.
And now... Drum roll here, Ron.
That was pretty pathetic.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know what that was, but we'll take it.
I actually meant a real drum roll.
Oh, drum roll here. There you go.
Post-production. Why bother with that when we've got these tongue sound effects going on over here? All right. And no. We've come to my favorite part of the show. We're about to share a story that is truly unbelievable, yet you know it must be true because...
You can't make this stuff up!
And ladies and gentlemen, we have a bonus. We have a twofer!
No way. Oh, I'm so excited.
Way. Okay, this is from Morro Bay, California, from February 4th, UPI. Police in California said Burger King employees who smashed the eatery's windows were acting on the instructions of a prankster. The Morro Bay Police Department said workers at the Burger King received a call late Saturday night from a prankster who claimed to be a fire department official warning them of a gas leak at the eatery. And the employees, acting on the instructions of the caller, smashed out the fast food restaurant's windows in order to allow the non-existent gas to escape. Video posted to Facebook by witness Brian Jagger shows the employees breaking the windows, okay, and wait for it, and crashing a car through the front doors in a misguided quest for ventilation.
My goodness.
Can I say this is an argument against fast food workers making $15 an hour?
Oh, I would agree. Yes, yes, yes. There you go. Oh, okay. And the bonus entry, folks.
Oh, goody.
This is from the Telegraph. So this is British news, okay? But it's not about something that happened there. A new tarantula has been found by scientists, apparently. And because of its proximity to Folsom Prison and its striking black appearance,
oh my goodness,
the creature has been named after Johnny Cash.
What an honor.
Oh my goodness. We now have the Johnny Cash tarantula.
Folsom Prison isn't... I'm trying to think where Folsom Prison's at.
That's California.
California? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. That makes sense where, you know, with the tarantula. Because I was thinking it was like, you know, the South where, You got some, you know, big spiders down there, but tarantulas, other than in Florida where they've been introduced, you generally don't have those kind of spiders.
Send your You Can't Make This Stuff Up ideas to story@caffeinatedthoughts.com, and we will give you the credit or the blame if we use your suggestion on the show.
Probably the blame.
It's always the blame.
Meanwhile, go find a Johnny Cash tarantula. I'm waiting for those to come out in the pet store.
What if they come with little guitars?
Yeah. Ring of fire. Okay. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. See you next week.
Take care, everybody.